You are listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony. Please visit our website radiosai.org to listen to our free internet streaming service. On this website, you can access audio streams. The first three are Asia Stream, Afri Stream and Ameri Stream, which offer you programs in the languages common to these geographic regions. The other two streams are Bhajan Stream and Discourse Stream. Click on the Bhajan Stream to listen to Asai Bhajan at any time of the day. Similarly, to listen to the divine voice of Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, please log on to the Discourse Stream. Just log on to radiosai.org and experience the divine love of Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba. For any inquiries, please email us at listener@radiosai.org.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram and a warm welcome to today's Thursday Live. You are tuned to Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai signing in along with my friend, audio engineer Yatharta. Today's broadcast is coming to you live from the studios of Radio Sai, situated in the holy and blessed hamlet Puttaparthi, the place which the Kali Yuga avatar Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba himself chose as his headquarters to impart his sacred message and teachings to the entire humanity. Inspired by Bhagwan's teachings on service, Gram Seva is Ram Seva, Love All, Serve All, we have aptly named this segment as Service, Love in Action. Bring your Swami's love and our love for Swami, translating into service to humanity. Well, dear listeners, today is 17th January and the celebration of the holy festival Sankranti has just concluded a couple of days back. The previous 1 week, Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram was filled with festivities, starting from the sports and cultural meet of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning on the 11th of this month, to the various cultural programs by the students of various campuses presented in the Sai Kulanth Hall. And dear listeners, after 2 days from now, that is on 19th, happens to be the 12th anniversary of the Sri Satya Sai Super Speciality Hospital situated at Whitefield, Bangalore. Last week, dear listeners, if you are there with me in the segment Service Love in Action, I spoke to you about the Sai movement that is spreading rapidly in the Latin American countries. I had played for you a special conversation with Mr. Leonardo Guter, the founder of the Sai Center in one of the Latin American countries, Argentina. Today in this segment, dear listeners, I'll be playing for you a panel discussion by the Hyderabad youth on the importance of molding the character of today's youth for a better tomorrow. This panel discussion was recorded in our studios just a couple of days back when they had come here on the occasion of the Sankranti festival. But to begin with, dear listeners, let us all collectively offer our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And let us all contemplate on his beautiful form by listening to a melodious Sai Bhajan.
Mein gulam, mein gulam,
Sairam, dear listeners, welcome back to today's Thursday Live. You are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony, God's own radio station, and I am Team Radio Sai's Raghu, hosting the segment Service Love in Action. Well, dear listeners, the digital clock in our studio shows the time has 11:05, and it's a pleasant day here at Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram. Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, and I quote, "Whenever there is a decay of dharma and rise of adharma, then I embody myself. For the protection of the good, for the destruction of the wicked, and for the establishment of dharma, I am born age after age." Unquote. Therefore, dear listeners, as per Lord's promise, in the Treta Yuga, he incarnated as Lord Rama, and he annihilated the wicked demon Ravana to establish dharma. In the Dwapara Yuga, Lord incarnated as Sri Krishna and brought peace and harmony by vanquishing the evil. In these past ages, dear listeners, the bad could be separated from the good and the unrighteousness from the righteous. But in the Kali Yuga, it is so different. Everyone is partly good and partly bad. Be it the circumstances or the company that one keeps, every man ends up having two sides. Then, how does the Lord annihilate the bad and protect the good? The Sri Satya Sai avatar did not come to annihilate, but has come to transform every man into God. He showed humanity that the path from this age was to foster good in each man and to remove the bad tendencies. He always said, "Love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never." But Swami did not stop by merely saying that. He lived every moment of his life spreading love and serving humanity. Among the many individuals Swami touched and transformed, one group that stands out is a bunch of simple youth from the city of Hyderabad in Andhra Pradesh, India. He left no opportunity unturned to turn them into a force of love and service, a force which is ever ready to tread the path shown by him. In today's Service Love in Action segment, dear listeners, we have two Sai youth from Hyderabad sharing their experience of love they experienced and the motivation they received from the Lord to serve the poor and needy in the society. They recollect the days when they were mere stones until the Lord picked them up and decided to turn them into gems. This episode, dear listeners, will give us an insight into many subtle things that Swami expects from a youth, from a parent, from a responsible Sai devotee. So, participating in this panel discussion are Mr. Y. Srinivas and Mr. Sai Gollapudi. Dear listeners, Mr. Y. Srinivas is serving as the president of the Sri Satya Sai Grama Seva Trust, started by Swami in the year 2003, and is actively involved in many service activities. He has been a member and leader of the group for over two decades and has had innumerable opportunities to be guided directly by Bhagwan. Professionally, he has been an associate vice president in a multinational company, and currently he holds the post director in two export companies. The other participant in the panel discussion, Mr. Sai Gollapudi, a qualified MS from the Purdue University in USA, was a director in Nokia in the US and also in India, and later was a senior vice president in the Satyam Computers. An ardent Swami's devotee from childhood and an active Sai worker for last 12 years in India, Swami himself had named him and had commanded him to be a trustee in the Sri Satya Sai Gram Seva Trust in Andhra Pradesh. Joining the discussion is also my colleague Sai Krishna. So, dear listeners, let's listen to the insights, the little things they learned, a youth perspective about service, about Sai mission and the way forward. This panel discussion was recorded in our studios just a couple of days back when they had come here on the occasion of Sankranti festival.
Sairam brother, you know, one thing that sort of intrigued me a lot is that out in modern society, as we step out and we look at fellow youth, we find that they're all sort of swayed by modern day indulgences and urges. You know, it could be movies, it could be going out with friends, eating, food and focusing on career. And what's very impressive to me, what's very extraordinary to me, is that I find a lot of youth getting involved in Swami message, mission, and activities. This is very extraordinary, because if I go out and see a spiritual practice, like a yagnam, yagam, or puja, or something in society, I find a lot of older people sitting there, and in the eve of their life, sitting there and focusing on God. Not many youngsters are getting involved. But yet, in Puttaparthi or in Sai activities, I'm finding a lot of youngsters getting involved. So the question that is coming to my mind is, what is the compulsion? What is drawing this? And what's really driving this? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, few things that occur to my mind right now. I would actually credit it to Bhagwan entirely, because he's been the source of inspiration for all these millions of youth across the world who are part of the Sai mission. And one important beginning, I would call it, it was personally a great beginning for me, which was triggered by Swami himself way back in 1989 sometime. I was very young, out of my college. I was still pursuing my graduation. And then that was a time when in one particular interview, Swami said, I felt that we came into the Sai fold very early, and which was I would call it a surprise of my life. And Swami said, "You are very, very late. You are very, very late." And I thought I was 18, 19 years old, and I've come very early into Swami's mission. And Swami said, "You are very, very late."
At 18, Swami was saying, "You're very late."
Yeah, he said, "You're very late. You've frittered away your life. You lost everything in life." Swami emphatically said that you're very late, and it is a very late beginning. I felt like grieving. I felt that, I lost the very crux of the very nucleus of my life. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that, this is something I need to focus upon. And then I got back. I felt as if I was denied divine love. Mm-hmm. Swami said, "You're not useful to me anyways. So I can't use you for my mission." This is how I felt. And then after I got back, I felt that, this is something I would like to pursue with a lot of intensity. Mm-hmm. And then I've devised my own plan, and then ensured that I focused on the Sai way of living. First thing that I could easily do is, change the company that I was in, the good company. Swami always talks about the importance of good company. Mm-hmm. And then the first thing I wanted to do, my parents didn't tell anything, but the thing I realized that I had a few bad friends, mm-hmm. and then I changed my circle. And then started proactively moving into the Sai circle. And then it really had a tremendous influence in my early days in my spiritual life.
That's extraordinary, because one of the things that's happening now with families, as we see in the world outside, is that there is a great compulsion for them to settle down in life. Parents are teaching their kids how you should settle down in life, how you should be successful, stable, and their impressions of this successful, happy life is getting a decent education, settling down at a flat or a car, and having a nice, happy family, and then maybe going on holidays, vacation, and sometimes when they're college age, they're thinking that the son should go abroad and study abroad, and they're teaching them how they should go and live a life of achievement, accomplishment. And what's happening that I've noticed in our own organization is that we're seeing youngsters coming in and who are actually making that sacrifice and saying no to that such a life and coming here. Do you think they missed out something by doing that? They're not going to a movie, they're going to a bhajan. Don't you think that somehow they're missing out something?
This reminds me of a hilarious incident where, a few of our Sai youth, they were telling us that, just like the way you just narrated, so their parents were prodding them to go to the films or to go to hotels, to pursue a career for abroad education or whatever you call it. And then these boys were somehow very eager to taste the bhajans, the flavor, the love of Swami and the presence of Swami in their personal life. And then their parents were not devotees. And then these boys had a lot of taste for bhajans. And then some of these youth were telling us that, they had to lie to go to a bhajan. They had to lie, saying that I am going to a film, and then they come for bhajans.
My goodness.
And this is very amazing to me. And it happens in today's world. There are a lot of young people who are very excited to be part of Sai phenomenon, Sai mission, so to say.
Gullapudi brother, I would ask you, what do you think inspired them to have flavor for bhajan rather than for going to a film? Unless you see some benefit. Nowadays, if you want to buy, let's say, 10 rupee chocolate, you see what are the ingredients, and then you see whether it is worth 10 rupees, then you're going to buy it.
Yes.
So in the same way, you see cost benefit for everything in life.
Yes, yes, yes.
So what do you think is benefiting them by coming to a bhajan? In your experience, like you or Srinivas brother, you have come in very early, according to the world, according to Swami, yes, Srinivas brother at 18 was very late, but according to the world, at 18, yeah, at a very young age, you've come into this movement and you've experienced Swami. So what do you feel? Did it benefit you? Does the cost-benefit analysis work for you in this whole game?
That's a very interesting question that you ask, because when we talk to youngsters, when we are ourselves involved in good activity, one of the things that we are finding interesting is that nobody has to explain why one should do good work, why somebody should do good deeds. A lot of speeches focus on why good. But I think the message is clear to all human beings that doing good is good. They get that point. I think what is unclear is, how do you do good stuff in a fun way and in an environment that is conducive for doing good and encourages good? So if you ask two people, hey, do you want to do something good? Then they say, yeah, sure, why not? Nobody wants to do intentionally bad unless there is something really wrong with them. So we don't have to explain do good is good. What we have to do is provide an environment. This reminds me of a very interesting study that was done, which we use in our actual planning and designing of activities. This is a study that Malcolm Gladwell talks about in his book. This study talks about two research groups, college students. Group A and Group B were actually recruited. And to Group A, they showed the importance of taking tetanus shots. And they said you should take the tetanus shots. And then they explained in a lot of verbose English, explicitly they said this is the reason why you should take tetanus shot. And then to Group B, they showed graphic images of impact of not taking tetanus shot. And they said these are the reasons why you should take tetanus shot. So Group A, text. Group B, a lot of graphical imagery. Now I ask you, which group do you think would be more inclined to take the tetanus shot? Group A with text prompting or Group B with a lot of visual prompting?
It would be, I think, Group B.
Group B, right? So that's a good guess. Now, can you guess the difference? Like, for example, Group A, let's say, is 10% of the people polled would come back and then say, I'll take a tetanus shot, whereas Group B would be 20%, 40%? Or what do you think would be the gap between the two? Is it a large gap, you think?
It would be quite a large gap, because when you see something, you get impressed rather than by just hearing or just reading about something.
Right. That's exactly what one would guess. But counterintuitively, what actually took place was the gap was very minimal. If 45% said, yes, we'll take tetanus shot from Group A, which is text-based prompting, then maybe it was 50 or 55% from Group B, they said they'll take that tetanus shot. So the difference between the prompting was not so high. Now, what's interesting about this study is, after this prompting was over, these scientists came back after like 3-4 weeks. He went back to all the people who said, I will take the tetanus shot, and he asked them again, did you really take the tetanus shot? So Group A was polled, and Group B was really polled. Now the question is, how many people of Group A or Group B do you think really took the tetanus shot? What would be your guess?
It would be minimal, maybe without, I don't know, without any prodding, without further force,
yes,
or following up, maybe very less number of, if 40% has polled for taking tetanus shot, then maybe around 10% would have taken.
Yeah. And actually, some people would guess that those people who committed in Group A, maybe half of them would go, or maybe 30%, 40%, or like you say, 10%. The study actually shows that only 3% of the people who actually committed to doing the tetanus shot really went and took the tetanus shot. So the study concludes that really nobody had to be told why to take a tetanus shot, whether graphically or textually. What they really needed to know was, hey, there's going to be a doctor, he's going to be giving tetanus shots, he's going to be on campus, university campus, he's going to be doing free tetanus shots, why don't you go get it? They already know the importance of tetanus shots. What they need is a conducive and favorable environment. And I think what Swami has done is created such a conducive environment in the Sai organization. For example, take bhajans. My God, the bhajans are so extraordinary. You know, they have such rhythm and congregational singing and whole bunch of people coming together. If youngsters come in with dholaks and kanjiras and come in, you should see a youngster playing kanjira and Sai bhajan. He would really get into the jam session, you know. And there is an extraordinary kind of feeling of engaging with the Nama Smarana. And to tell somebody, or they live in this feeling that Nama Smarana is sitting there in some sort of dhyanic pose, you know, lotus position and seeing and sitting there, that might be a turn off for a few. But if you actually see 20 kids sitting there and praying Kanjira and going guru, and then they're jamming this thing and then having a beautiful bhajan session, then a kid who's walking by, he sees this energy. He sees this and he gets attracted. And I think that's what Swami has brought in. So bhajan has been an extraordinary force that he has brought in youngsters. So take New Year's Eve. That's a time when youngsters are out partying, doing their own thing. But we are having bhajans in Shivam. And when we are having bhajans in Shivam, at least the youth portion at the peak hour, that is an attraction. People come in and they say, you know what, we want to be there with other like-minded youngsters. So the critical mass builds and attracts more critical mass.
Whatever you are saying, it is like you are saying the conducive environment, creating conducive environment for other youth.
Yes.
That's what, did that inspire you or anything else inspired you? What I am saying is like to participate,
yes.
You are saying you pass by.
Yes.
Yes. When you pass by, you see the energy.
Yes.
Then you get involved. That is one thing.
Yes.
But without passing by.
Yes.
How do anybody get into it?
Well, I mean, I talked about bhajan being an inspiration for few, and seva is another inspiration for few. For example, New Year's Eve, another seva that people at Shivams or seva the youngsters, brothers are doing is, you know, blankets. They cover people who are homeless people on the streets. They go midnight, they drive around bikes, and they go and people who are sleeping under the chill of the night, they cover them with blankets. This is a beautiful, extraordinary move. And what happens is, youngsters like to go on bikes, youngsters like to go out, but they would like to do good things with this, right? Going out on a bike can be good or bad, but if you give them a choice of doing good, they would like to do good. So that's what seva has done. Youngsters like to engage. And so they are engaging in good action. That's how service has been a turn on for youngsters. So Swami has inspired like that. For me personally, I think it was neither of these. It was Swami himself, because I was born into a Sai organization and a Sai fold. So I was blessed. I always discuss with brothers here, saying that, you know, we are really, 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 really very blessed because we are, you know, anchored around Swami, Swami's goals, Swami's ideas, Swami's missions that he has set for us. And so in that sense, I think, Brother Vaisi, you'll recall our discussions about how we feel anchored on, and at a time where, you know, like a kite, a cut-off kite, how it drifts. I feel like somebody's holding us and taking us. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I exactly feel the same. And probably every being, every species is blessed by the divine, since each species, each person belongs to the divine, right? Mm-hmm. But then, are we able to realize that we are blessed? Is every person experiencing the link with the divine? Is every person feeling connected to the source that he has come from? That is the ecosystem, that's probably what you're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. And this is how I get what you're conveying. And this ecosystem will help us communicate with the divine and experience his love, experience his grace, and feel fortunate and things like that. And then I remember one context where in one of the divine interactions, Swami was asked as to why people should go to temples and churches and mosques. Mm-hmm. Why should one go to the temple in the first place when divine is everywhere? Mm-hmm. When divine is in you can experience wherever you want. Why is this context that, you know, you have to go to a temple to feel God? Is it really necessary? And then Swami tells something, an amazing story here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really very intriguing. I mean, the thing is, Swami said, you can't experience divinity in a playground.
Mm-hmm.
You can't experience divinity on a main road.
Yes.
Where there's a lot of noise, you can't focus and things like that. And then Swami said, if you go to a temple, what happens is a lot of people come there and they pray and they do some chanting, they sit in meditation, and the very place carries those vibrations. And then this ecosystem that you're talking about, which is conducive for spiritual growth, and that is, those are the places where one can experience divinity. Not only that, and the Swami is so beautifully, he with nice analogies and that are understandable to a layman, and Swami narrates this very beautifully in one particular, in a story format, and then he says, he tells us that, you know, and then he has a cow, and you want cow milk. When you milch the cow, and you have to milch the udder for the milk. And though the blood of the cow is across the body of the cow, you know, the milk comes from blood, and the blood is across the body of the cow. And then, but if you want milk, you have to milk the udder and not near the tail or the or the horn of the cow, whatever. And then, so it's very important that Swami really so nicely, so beautifully, these temples and churches and these mosques actually create that kind of ecosystem which is very conducive for a common man to experience the divine. And I think that's where the ecosystem really plays a great role.
But then, brother, I have here one very interesting thing going on in my mind. When you said like temple, church, mosque, these are all places where it, the conducive environment is created. But if you see in our context, in Sai context, everywhere you are, a group of youngsters or a group of people with like-minded, you make that place as a temple.
Right.
You make that place as a church. You make that place as a place where you pray.
Yes.
You know, like you go to a village and that instantly the mind converts everything into like a temple environment, and that's where, you know, Swami brings in that wherever you are, you can create a temple, you can create a church, you can create a mosque. That's what I've seen, and I've seen you guys, Hyderabad especially, Swami has caught you by hand, literally caught you by hand, and like he said, 18 is late, so it's like pulling with your collar and saying, where are you, where are you lost? That's what he has done, and he has caught you into this whole service activity. He has made you taste by hand. You read Paramahamsa Yogananda's book, and you see how the master has brought the disciple and then made him taste and let loose. Then you just go and do it. Like what I want listeners to know, or they should know, how, what was the sweetness when he brought you into this? Like he showed you the way. So how did you take the first steps? What in that service has motivated you?
Actually, I wanted to comment on that. A couple of things that came to my mind as you were talking about this. One was, I was recalling Swami's beautiful story about his avatar as Rama. And he would be walking in the forest, and right behind him was Mother, and then Mother Sita, and behind him Brother Lakshmana. They're all walking with their heads down. And then suddenly, for no reason at all, Lakshmana says, unprompted, he says, Brother Rama, how is it that that you compelled me to come into the forest? How is it that you asked me to come into the forest and you dragged me into all this thorny roads and thorny bushes and other things? I could have been in the palace. And he's like, you prompted me, this is not good. So he gives that kind of tonality to the dialogue. And then after a couple of minutes, then he says, you may say it is my prompting, but still you are causing the prompting now. So again, you are responsible, in even in that indirect fashion, you are responsible for making me come to the forest. Even if I agree that I did it out of my own compulsion, you caused me to think like that. So again, I hold you responsible for bringing me into this kind of distress, in this kind of position. And what is this kind of life? So he thinks that, and he walks still further. And then after some time, he realizes, oh my God, what have I done? I have told my brother, Lord Rama himself, that he made me do this, and then that he has caused misery in my life. This is so wrong. So he falls at Lord Rama's feet, and he says, Swami, I have done a mistake. How could I have accused you of such a wrongness? It's not true. Then again, Lord Rama smiles it off. But Swami, you must have been my prompting. So you must have prompted all this. Why this? What happened? Why did I get this kind of thought? Which is a totally unbecoming of a Lakshmana, actually. Why did I get this kind of thought? Then Lord Rama explains that it's the Stala Prabhavam. He says that this area was kind of an area of Rakshasas, you know, where they dwelt. So that Stala Prabhavam actually prompted him to think like that, he says. And that was a beautiful message that Swami said in passing in many discourses. And so I take that message about the temple, the mosque, the places of worship, because they have this Stala Prabhavam. So many well-intending brothers and sisters come into that place of worship. they yearn for God, they think of God. So just walking into such an environment creates that urge and interest in us. And so that the place of worship, the udder of spirituality, is where I think we get the prompting of God. Now, what I found when I was thinking about this, that was extraordinary, is I was imagining myself driving my car. So definitely sometimes what we do is we take our car to the petrol bunk and fill it with petrol, because the petrol is in the petrol bunk. But what's interesting is that once the petrol is in the tank, then the car can be in the street away from the petrol bunk and still drive.
Right.
Exactly. So it is actually the petrol in the car that is actually driving the car, not the petrol bunk.
Right.
But petrol bunk is a refueling station.
Right.
So what has happened is Swami has become this bellum, this good, this
jaggery.
And he has really enticed us and seduced us, to speak, in a spiritual seduction. He brought us in and then he poured out his love. And he filled us with some sort of extraordinary yearning and quest for divinity. And then somehow our heart is pining for something like that. And we can't taste that. We don't have to taste that just in the petrol bunk alone. There is an urge then when you go out into the street, into the village and other places, that you want to do something like that, and you can actually get that prompting right from the heart. And of course, there are so many fellow pilgrims in the path who talk about anchoring all this. You know, they crystallize all this, saying that they have a photo and take a vibhuti packet, think of Sai Namam. These are all anchors. But at the end of the day, Swami has already filled the heart with it. And so somehow Swami, in his, through his divine magic, through his words, wisdom, beauty, you know, darshan, whatever it is, he has somehow energized us. And then we go into the, you know, street, and when we're doing seva, that energy is coming out. And every now and then we come back here to refuel.
That's very nice, brother. As you said, the energy is in petrol bunk. You know, it doesn't drive us, but once you're refueled, you can go anywhere and that car is driven. And in this context, as you were talking about service and how Swami fueled or refueled all of us into doing this kind of service, also in this whole movement, whole Sai movement and whole service and the love we talk about, everything, we saw an example in Swami. It's not that just he told us something. He just didn't refuel us by, you know, just saying something. I love you. That didn't refuel us. Something else refueled us. Something else made us do that. Because at least I see it as the example. You saw in Swami that selflessness. You know, you saw Swami doing something for you. You are nothing for Swami as such. If you take Swami as another person, he is nothing to us. We are nothing to him. We are all connected universally, but still, as a person. But still, he poured so much love on each one of us. He showed by example. He constructed a hospital. Those are small examples of his love, which he did, and we got inspired. So some example is what he has set in. So, like, what in Swami did you all pick up? Like the Hyderabad youth, I would ask, like, when you see, you know, like in worldly terms, love at first sight. That's what happens for every youth. You know, when I was interviewing Brother Y. Srinivas, he was saying it was love at first sight with Swami. You know, you see Swami, and so what, Srinivas brother, I would ask you, what in Swami inspired you the most? Means, like, what quality of Swami has refueled you the most, that till today, till this breath, you're always thinking, what can I do for the society? What can we as a group do for the society?
I sincerely feel that it is sheer Swami's grace that a person is connected to him. I mean, I sincerely feel so, because there are many others within our family, within so many devotees' families, that couldn't still get to Swami yet, though right next, your neighbors are there, your relatives are there. So somewhere I have this feeling that it is purely his will, and it's an opportunity bestowed on each one of us. I don't really see it as a personal merit, because personal merit, I know where it gets me. I mean, I sincerely feel that it is really a grace bestowed on each of these devotees across the world, and it's time that we realize that it's a boon given to each one of us. See, left alone, I would have been someplace which I would not want to be in. So, left alone. So, it is really his anchor, it is his inspiration, his drawing us closer, and actually Swami made 100 moves and we made 2 moves. That's what I feel. you know, and then he made 100 monks, and it's all about him, and it's all about his magnanimity and his benediction, and it's very important that we recognize this. And then the amount of sacrifice that Swami has put in one particular interview, I remember Swami was actually narrating some story, and then suddenly on top of my voice, I had no other feeling, but then suddenly I kind of loudly conveyed to Swami that, Swami, Meer Chalaga Unde Chalu, Swami Chalaga Undali, we want you to be cool and happy, and we want Bhagwan to be always, you know, comfortable and happy. Because there's somewhere in me, there was a bother that Swami is going through a lot, and, you know, and this triggered the thought in me, and then I was just praying for Swami's well-being more than, because if Bhagwan is happy and delighted and he's energetic and he's, I know that he's a divine element, but then I was feeling concerned about this, and then I just said this to Swami, and then Swami said, నేను ఎప్పుడు చల్లగానే ఉంటానప్పా. హీ హ్యాడ్ హిస్ ఫేస్, హీ వాజ్ హ్యాడ్ ఎ బిగ్ స్మైల్ ఆన్ హిస్ ఫేస్, అండ్ హీ ఎంజాయిడ్ దట్ కాంటెక్స్ట్, అండ్ హీ సెడ్ నేను ఎప్పుడు చల్లగానే ఉంటానప్పా, ఐఎమ్ ఆల్వేస్ కూల్, స్వామి ఇస్ ఆల్వేస్ కూల్, స్వామి ఇస్ ఆల్వేస్ హ్యాపీ, అండ్ ఐ కుడ్ సీ ద హ్యాపీనెస్ ఇన్ హిస్ ఫేస్. సో బేసికలీ వెన్ వీ ఇన్ గ్రాటిట్యూడ్ వెన్ వీ కన్వే టు హిమ్ దట్ స్వామి యూఆర్ డూయింగ్ ఎ లాట్, and then it's important, you know, we are actually not able to live up to your expectations. And he also gives that room and space for us to, you know, many mistakes, each one of us do so many mistakes, each one of us are struggling with our own vices, and then yet, you know, Swami was so inclusive of all, each one of us, and he never excluded any one of us for our own, you know, failings, I would call it. And then it's only sheer mercy. And had Swami been a taskmaster the way he was, Kulwantal would be empty. And then, see, really, it is his, it's all about Bhagwan, and he's the nucleus. And around the nucleus, all of us revolve. And today, in today's context, more so because the physical element of the divine is not, we are not able to perceive his physical form, or touch him, or feel him, or talk to him. And it's important that we remember these great moments and cherish these moments all our life, and connect and experience the divinity.
I totally agree with you. I think that grace of God is an extraordinary boon that he has bestowed upon us, and it's a gift worth priceless treasures, you know. And it's I don't know why he has bestowed upon us this gift. And also I feel that he is bestowing this and giving this gift to many. It is our carelessness that we are not taking it forward. One of the things that I personally felt that Swami talked along with grace is the, you know, the positive negative effect. So he says that the positive and negative in the wiring meet, you know, there is some sort of action. So the human effort and God's grace he talks about. And what I saw in my human effort in this very same question is that I saw faith, then experience and outcome in that order. So first the faith is that, you know, Swami is first of all knowing. Swami, whatever he's telling it for my own good, and what he's telling is also the best practice. So this is a kind of faith we must have, I thought. For example, when I moved, when I made a career move, it took me 1 year to make that move because everything was going well. But from a value point of view, I had to make a value decision, and the value decision was Swami driven. And so when everything is going well, I had to make a value decision based on what Swami said. It was only the faith that I had to base myself on. And so first, I think several times in my life, I recall making a faith-based decision, saying that, you know, Swami said this, there must be something behind this. I know he knows everything, and he's saying it for my own well-being. So with that faith, with that conviction, we have to take the first step, I thought. And then when I did that, the experience has been very beneficial, self-gratifying, and I walked away thinking, oh my God, it's so extraordinary that Swami, with so much foresight, has already prompted me to think like this. You know, who would have foreseen all these consequences, unintended negative consequences I would have received had I gone the conventional route? You know, if I went with my career route, I would have, you know, caught up in some sort of other extraordinary negative consequences. But yet, by following Swami, I did the right thing at the right time. That type of experience has reinforced my faith in God again, and faith in Swami in particular.
And the, so first the faith, then came the experience, and the outcome was positive, therefore it reinforced. And so I think this continued to happen with Swami, and so that therefore it created that inspiration for me.
I agree with you, brother. Yesterday I think we were talking, you know, as Srinivas brother said, when he was saying, you know, the all-inclusiveness of Swami, I just felt love is that. Love is that all-inclusiveness. He accepted us as we are. From there he took off, he molded, and he brought us up to where he is. Or he is bringing us up. Let's not say we are there, because it's a, all life is a learning. Then one thing which you were saying yesterday, you know, faith. Faith comes first and then experience. Just like you were saying yesterday, you get into a bus. You just have pure faith that that fellow is, without getting into any accident, he's going to reach us to the destination. So what you're saying is faith comes first and then experience. It takes time to say that, because experience, all want an experience first, then you have faith.
I remember one hilarious incident where one of the boys asked Swami. The context was, you know, this boy was preparing for exams and he was flunking, and he had few backlogs every time. The thing was, he was having this conversation with Swami, and he was saying, Swami, you know, I did my effort, I prayed for you and you didn't help. You know, I didn't get the results the way I wanted. Swami said something amazing. I thought Swami would drive him to have faith and pray intensely, or do study well, or something like that. This was the conversation I was expecting from Swami, and Swami did exactly the converse of it. And then he said, see, it's very good that you have little bit of disbelief that God may not help you. It's good, he said.
Oh, I see.
It's good. That's a converse. So normally Swami says, have implicit faith, 100%. And then, but here Swami said, a little bit of disbelief is okay.
A pinch of disbelief.
I thought, what is Swami talking about here?
Yeah.
What Bhagavan was saying is, see, with that little bit of disbelief, you make effort. You know, God may not help me. What if Swami doesn't help me and I flunk the exam? So this will make you put in enough effort and intensity so that you can get through the exams. And Swami said, because of this effort and because of this 99% prayer and 1% disbelief, 99% prayer will get you blessings, and then this effort will get you the result. So this I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, only Swami can get you into that. You know, we never think the way. And one more thing I would like to ask you all. See, what is the importance of time in all this? Like, I could do this service, I could love this, you know, I have my family, I have my people, I have my small society around me. What is it? What is the urgency? And so I want to know, what is it that pulls us all that we should do this now? You know, like, why we want to do this now and not later? What is the role that time plays in all this?
That's a very interesting element to add into the discussion. I have two words to say. One is seed and the other one is rhythm. Both are kind of time related. The concept is that we all admire a flower, a fruit. We all admire the end outcome. But little do we realize that it takes a seed to make a fruit. It takes a seed to make a flower. And so time is the link between the seed and the flower. The time is the link between the seed and the fruit. And along with this time component needs the service and attention. So we must invest early. We must seed early. And we must nurture that seed and protect it and guard it and let it grow. And cultivate it.
Sapling.
Cultivate it into a sapling. So time is that link. And so what happens is then the seed slowly becomes and blossoms into a beautiful flower. The seed then becomes a fruit. You see, in society what happens, we go, we admire a beautiful musician because he's played a great tabla. We look at Zakir Hussain and says, ah, kya ustad. You know, he look at the tabla, he's a maestro on the tabla. But I give you the same tabla and I give you the same stage and same mics. Can you play? That's what we can ask people. You have the two hands like Zakir has two hands. You have the same tabla that he has. You have the same microphone in the audience. Can you mesmerize the audience? What has happened is there is an element of time that took in that Zakir incorporated into his hands and his thing, which is what we're calling sadhana or abhyasa. So now what has happened is that Swami got us in early, thank God, and then he seeded us with good
intentions, good ideas, and then he nurtured us and cultivated us through, you know, wise words, through speeches, hand-holding, and through so much of that interaction, that slowly we are able to see the blossoming flower and the blossoming or the ripe fruit. And then we say, oh my God, that just-in-time action at that point was very essential for this kind of thing. And a lot of people come around and say, how is it that, you know, you're going to bhajan on a Sunday? Well, this is not something that happened overnight. This is something that Swami cultivated. So that's the first part of seed and the flower relationship. The other one is rhythm. The beauty of rhythm in music is that you can time yourself. So, for example, in dance, the next move can be anticipated. Because rhythmically, you know, the next beat is going to go. You can anticipate the next sound.
Right.
So, in anticipation of it, you can be prepared. So, that's a beautiful timing issue, you see. So, you can rendezvous with life and you can meet it right at that time. And then, in anticipation of the event, you can do the right thing. Like, for example, an older person is sitting there and he's across the street and he's looking left and right. You can anticipate that he would need help. In anticipation, you can do good karma. That is the beauty of time. And you can actually see somebody in a hospital looking at the information desk and struggling. In anticipation of that, you can do good. For example, I remember in my work life, I used to fly quite a bit to Europe. And I one time recall seeing older parents coming from India trying to go abroad, and Lufthansa connection at Frankfurt was a big connecting terminal complexity, you know, for these older people. They would come in, they didn't know how to go from terminal A to terminal B, from this gate to that gate, and they used to get confused, and some of them couldn't speak English or even Hindi. There would be Gujarati or Tamil or something. And I remember that I would come in and I would give myself enough time between these flights for myself, and then I would suddenly rush to the next landing, Indian flight. And then I would see any, I look for some older people coming out of the flight. And then I will just watch and see their behavior. Are they getting confused? Are they overwhelmed with this experience, this novelty of being in a foreign land? And are they overwhelmed? Are they looking for some help? And the moment I see that, then I go and then say, excuse me. And I try to speak to them in their native tongue if possible. And suddenly they see some fellow passenger and say, hey, can you help me? My son is in New York. I want to go to New York. How do I get to that point? And say, I'm going to New York. Come. And I'll show them. And really, I may not be going to New York. I could be going to Munich or some other place. But I would do this because I saw that in their eyes, in their thing, there was a need. And that need was an opportunity for me to fulfill my karma and then get that blessing of God. So you could anticipate. So timing is, rhythm is also very important in time.
And as you said, no, you have to look for opportunity. First opportunity may be given to you. Swami says, okay, go do that service. First, he may order you. After some time, he would leave you to look for opportunity. That's what he has got in you all, like in all of us. In all of us, he has got the drive. If we are able to look for the opportunity, it is because of him. Mm-hmm. Because he looked for opportunities to love us. He looked for opportunities to build those things for us. So it's basically he looked for opportunities to search for us. It's not we waiting for him. He waited for us, basically.
That's a beautiful thing that Swami summarized for us. And that's an extraordinary Vedam that he has given to us as human values. He's saying, in my understanding of what he his message, he's saying that don't look at the world through the eyes that are physical. Look at it through the wisdom eye. Jnana Chakshu. He's saying look at it through the wisdom eye. And the moment you see the world through the wisdom of the third eye, you actually see the reality of Satyam. And he says, for that you have to have the prema prompting. You know, with prema you look at it this way. And he says, suddenly you see the reality of the world. Right? You won't see an old passenger crossing a street. You actually see the opportunity for service. So the Jnana Chakshu will give you that opportunity. And the moment you see, have darshan of Satyam, then he says, dharmam will naturally follow. And so with prema, you seek the truth, you suddenly get dharma out of it, and then outcome becomes shanti and ahimsa.
Exactly.
So the beauty of the whole divine human values actually flows out of that. You know, and such simplicity has given Vedam, you know, it's extraordinary.
Srinivas brother, you know, sometime back when we were having a conversation in Telugu, you told me a beautiful incident about Swami calling you all for interview. And you told me something which is very nice. You know, at that point of time, I felt the urgency of time. You know, could you recollect? Are you able to recall?
Yeah, definitely. And this happened in Vrindavan. And we were a bunch of 40, 50 boys who went on cycles to Vrindavan, and Swami called us in. And then, see, the thing was, Swami narrated so many nice stories, and then it's time for darshan, I need to move out, and you boys, you move out. He was driving us out of the interview rooms, so, and none of us would want to go away from Swami, and everyone was coming back to Swami again and again, and Swami was pushing us out of the interview room. And it was a nice father-son relationship that each one of us were experiencing. And then, Swami said, see, if you want an interview tomorrow morning again, then you have to go out now. So Swami has his own way of handling things. It is just beautiful. And then, in expectation of tomorrow's interview, all of us started behaving. And then we all moved out. And then the last guy moved out. And then Swami said, shh, come in again. And then we all moved in again. We didn't realize.
You left the room and Swami called you back.
We went outside. All of us went outside. And then Swami from the door, he came up to the door and he says, shh, come in again. And then we all came in again. We thought, oh my God, this is an extension of an interview again. And then Swami bolts the door. And he again sits in his throne, a chair. And then he says, see, there's something important that I want to tell you. And I didn't want to miss it. And then he said, if you want to do any good deed, okay, do it immediately. Don't delay even for a minute, he said. And then he also narrated. He said, if you delay, what happens is in few minutes, your mind will change. The thought of engaging in a good deed also loses its intensity. So don't delay, he said. The moment you want to do a good deed, do it takshaname, do it immediately, he said. And then don't delay, because this will get you the deservedness to earn grace. This will get you the deservedness to earn the benefits of good action, the results. Then he said, if you want to do bad, you know, you want to curse somebody, you are very angry at somebody, whatever. And then he said, delay it for years, he said. Bad action, delay it for years, and good action, don't delay even for a minute, because your mind will change, he said.
And that's what exactly he has done. Whenever he got a good thought, he just did it. Yeah. Now, all Trikarna Shuddhi, what Swami calls, no? Thought, word and deed at one point.
You are listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony. Radio Sai brings to you every day the teachings and the universal message of love of Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba.
Sairam, dear listeners, this is the segment Service Love in Action. And right now you are listening to a panel discussion by the Hyderabad youth on the importance of molding the character of today's youth for a better tomorrow. Well, participating in this panel discussion are Mr. Y. Srinivas and Mr. Sai Gollapudu. Both of them have had the good fortune of basking in the divine love of our beloved Bhagwan, where they were taught the lessons of love and service. This panel discussion was recorded in the studios just a couple of days back when they had come here on the occasion of Sankranti festival. Well, dear listeners, listening to the discussion, one of the important points that caught my attention is that if you get a good thought and wish to do anything good, do it immediately. And if you get a bad thought and wish to do anything bad, keep postponing it. In fact, dear listeners, as you heard in the discussion, Brother Srinivas, Y. Srinivas telling us that Swami himself had told him that if you get a bad thought, postpone it for years together. Well, in this context, dear listeners, there's a poignant episode from the epic Ramayana, which Swami had narrated. It seems after Lord Rama shot the final arrow at Ravana, the demon Ravana was about to die, then Rama called Lakshmana and told him to go and learn something from Ravana before he dies, as Ravana, for however evil he was indeed a great learned scholar. So when Lakshmana goes and asks the demon Ravana to teach him something, Ravana says, and I quote, "If you wish to do anything good, something that will benefit others, do it immediately, don't postpone. But if you wish to do something bad, keep postponing it," unquote. In fact, Ravana was saying this to Lakshmana with a feeling of remorse, as he knew the art of converting the salt water, he knew the art of converting the salt water into sweet water, and wanted to transform the seawater around Lanka to drinking water for the benefit of the citizens of his kingdom. But for some reasons, he put it off for later and never did it. But on the other hand, he got the bad thought of kidnapping Mother Sita and did it immediately. This was his fault. This led to his downfall. So, dear listeners, this is one of the take-home lessons that you heard in this panel discussion in which the Hyderabad youth are discussing on how to mold the character of today's youth to a better tomorrow. Further in the discussion, they talk about what Swami has said about controlling our senses and making the right choices. So let's continue listening to this engaging discussion.
When you're talking about, you know, interactions with Swami, that's what all our listeners want to listen, because there are so many who are out there craving to know what Swami told. So I would like to ask you one thing. See, in doing service, the last part is going to the place and showering love and doing service is the last in the act. The first in the act is purifying ourselves or creating that space to see something happening. Golapudi Brother said, you know, looking for an opportunity, you have to, not through physical eyes, you have to look through something else, then you look for opportunity. Otherwise, you look at that old couple as someone who is looking at the board looking for any flight. But you are looking through something, you are looking for an opportunity to serve. That's when you are looking for it. So, the first thing is purifying your space inside to look for an opportunity. So, what is it that blocks youth? Our senses, we are not able to control them. Because we have all kinds of, you know, as you said, we want to go for a movie. Because it has a music in it, it has sensuous things in it, and we would like to see what we can't do in real life, we want to see in the real life. That's what we want to do. So, how do we purify our senses? Definitely, I'm sure Swami would have talked about this to youth, to all of you in personal kind. So, I would like to know what Swami told youth, how to control your sense, because that is the first step in going towards service or love.
In fact, I can remember two, three very good instances, and rest can add. And basically, I remember my personal indulgence in a movie. What happened is, I was never a movie buff in my life, and I was really not appreciative of these movies because I would fall asleep in the film normally. So what happens is, a friend of mine came to my house and they said, hey, brother, let's go for a film. And somehow, I was not very excited about it, but then, you know, I said, see, brother, I have some guests are coming and I can't join you or something. I tried to kind of pause him and tell him that I wouldn't join. But then, my friend was relenting. You know, he was saying, see, boss, today there's no getaway for you. So, this is the way world is, you know. This is the way world is. Even if you want to keep away, they will rope you in, they will pull you in, and that tests our conviction, our desire to cling to Swami, desire to cling to the values, you know. And it's important. And then, the pull is heavy, we understand, right? So each one of the excitement outside is much larger or bigger than the excitement here, whatever. See, because this is what is very gratifying outside. And then he was like relenting, he was pushing me to come to the movie. And then poor me, you know, I had to say yes. So I went there. I went to the movie. And little did I realize that, you know, I thought it was just a film and I just went with friends casually. And then after a month or so, I came to Puttaparthi. More than a month passed. And then I came here and I was sitting in some 10th row, 12th row, some place. And then a very surprising incident, this one. And especially the bhajan was going on in the evening. And then during the bhajan, normally Swami, once he sits in the throne, you know, he doesn't again move out and think until unless there's something urgent. And it so happened that during the bhajan in the evening, Swami gets up from his chair and comes, walks the length of the corridor, comes to the East Prashanti gate side, and then he calls me from some 12th row like this. I was really zapped by this sudden divine intervention. And then he calls me from 12th row. And then
He gestures towards you.
And he says, hey, come here. And then I thought, no. A lot of people felt that, oh, this guy is really blessed and he's really getting a kid off him. Little did I realize that it was such a thing to receive from Swami. It's not easy to get a blasting from Swami. And so, this 10, 12 rows, I went up to the front and I said, Swami, what? And then he says, how dare you go to the film? He said. And then after about 40, 50 days, this happened. What film is the idea? I didn't realize what this film was because it was already a month past and it's off my mind. And then Swami, film? And he said, yes. 1 month ago, you went to the film. How dare you go to this film? He said. And I said, Swami, I didn't know what to react. I said, Swami, a friend of mine wanted me to join and I couldn't say no to him. So, and then Swami said, is your friend important or is Swami important? What is important to you? So you follow your friend and not Swami. Is that what you're telling me? He ripped me open, ripped me apart in the darshan lines, and then bhajan was going on, and I was like petrified. I was trembling. At that time, Swami had a red face, and he was just yelling, and he was pointing finger, and then in the darshan lines. And then he moves back, and he was going back to the bhajan. This was the only thing he did. He came out, he just blasted me, and then bhajan was going back again. And then he moved past 5-6 steps, and then turns back from that point. Yeah. And then he said, "I am watching you every minute. Be careful." He said,
"Whoa,
be careful." And then he points out this particular aspect, and then he Swami just goes into the bhajan. And what brother was asking just now, that's about the sense control part. You know, it's probably the most critical area in young people's lives, you know, especially the youth. See, they're just like the way many times Swami keeps saying that, you know, discipline comes ahead of devotion, and devotion is an inner connect that you experience with Swami. But then if you don't discipline yourself, this devotion also might not have gathered the momentum that it is supposed to.
I wanted to remind you of the story about the rose and thorns, and then the full cup. Why don't you share that?
Same thing on the.
It's actually a delicate thing to convey, but then it was how Bhagwan would condescend and to our level and communicate to us and help us understand these nuances and these important things. And it's so beautiful. We have to be ever grateful to Swami.
It's the father and son moment.
Father son moment. See, many times young people cannot discuss with their parents too. Mm. How many young people can discuss with their parents about lust or greed or whatever? I mean, many times we don't discuss with our parents as well. We only discuss with our friends. But then here was a sweet Lord who was willing to help us on every aspect of life, every aspect, every fundamental of life. And then, you know, we could easily confide in him. We could say anything to him, and he would receive anything. He took so much of trouble for our sake. And then here we ask Swami, lustful thinking is one area of concern, and this is actually bothering us. It's so obsessing that it is coming in the way, and we are not able to follow Bhagwan with the intensity, with the ideals with which we are supposed to follow, and this is really bothering us. Swami suddenly started explaining, and he says, "Rose is love, thorns are lust," he said. And then when you pluck a rose, you're ensuring that you're not touching the thorns, he said. So you're taking the love and not the lust. So in every aspect of life, you derive the love and don't touch the lust, or something like that. It was kind of sounding very very profound and very subtle, and I personally couldn't understand what Swami was trying to convey. And then we kind of again probed Swami, and then he said, "Swami, can you tell us more about this? I mean, we want to understand this well." And then he says, "See, the lust is also given by God." He said, "It's like any other sense, as every sense aspect is given by God, and they are not supposed to be bad. You know, they are actually good things that God has bestowed on human body. But the thing is," he said, "lust is like a vessel filled with water," he said. "If you add more water to it, it overflows and it bothers you," he said. So, and then what Swami said is something amazing. He said, "You know, your duty is to see that you don't add more fuel to it and it overflows and it irritates you. So what you should do is just allow it to be there, and it has a purpose. You have to be focused on the other aspects of life, and don't get obsessed with that. And then cut your inlets." What is important that Swami conveyed is, you cut your inlets. You watch films, you read wrong literature, or you get into wrong habits or whatever. What happens is these inlets will actually bother the balance of the thing that is given by God, and then it actually overflows and it disturbs you. And that's what Swami said. So very profound indeed. And especially it is very useful to young people, and it really helped me, because it was Bhagwan's guidance. It really helped us. And then I'm sure it will help every young person following Bhagwan.
Swami talks about man freedom, not animal freedom.
Hmm.
No, freedom in true sense, that God, we talk about man's freedom and not the animalistic behavior. Freedom to do like an animal would do. But one thing that I'm prompted by brother's conversation here is that in life we make a lot of choices. Each choice has a consequence, some unintended consequences. The game of life is to be played understanding what consequences we want and how do we want to design ourselves for the right consequences. We talk about jealousy being bad. We talk about competition being bad. And all these things typically tend to be bad. But jealousy for God, anger with or for you know, divine purposes, these are also valuable. You know, we can have our own you know, conversation with God where we are getting upset with Him. So anger in itself is not bad because it's God-given gift. But how it is utilized and what consequences it is given is actually what colors it. So all these negative tendencies that we may have, turn it towards God. So in a practical way, one of the things that I had to personally experiment and experience was this this movie thing. As a child, like any other child, I got accustomed to watching television. And it was such a common convention thing, you know. And at that time, I was growing up as a youngster and I was used to watching television. Nothing really profound. You just come in, turn on the TV and watch. Just because it's there and you have the access to it. So it was just a kind of a habit, a creature of habit I was. One New Year's Day, I took a resolution. I said, why not I stop watching TV this year? And when you're doing something good, Swami says, all the forces of nature will conspire to make it happen, right? So I was like, oh, suddenly I got this idea. Yeah, why not I do that? I took the resolve that day that this year I will not watch television. And then what I started doing was, I said, what if I'm walking by the TV room, the living room where the TV was? Then I said, okay, I'll give myself a 5 second or some timer. I said that if I'm allowed to see the TV for two, you know, some duration like 5 seconds or 4 seconds or something, but beyond that I can't. So if I'm passing and there is a television, I won't act funny. I won't go like this and stare away. But I would pass by that. So I started practicing that. So that meant that if I'm having a conversation and suddenly one of my brothers or somebody turned on the television, then immediately I would get up and go. Without making a scene, I would just sort of subtly walk away. And if I'm passing by and I see a television there and if I could cross through that corridor within 5 seconds, I would do it. Otherwise, I would do my business elsewhere. Because I was worried that the maya of television would attract me. That's why I had the timer.
This reminds me of one of Swami's input on television.
Mm.
Swami was admonishing one of the brothers one day that his TV addiction is really going out of the roof,
mm.
you know. And then he said, see, you fellow, you're watching too much of television. I don't like this. And Swami was chiding this boy. And this boy was saying, Swami, I just watch for 1 hour or something, as if, you know what, as if when Bhagavan is correcting you, it's better we accept the fault and receive it. And he was saying, Swami, I watch for 1 hour only, as if he has missed the other 23 hours. And then the best part is, Swami said, not only 1 hour, not only you watching, you're making your entire family sit in front of the TV and you're making them watch.
Mm.
And not only that, there are a lot of guests who are coming to your house, your visitors, neighbors and all that. When they are coming, they are also sitting next to your side and they are also watching television. You're actually creating a community around your television viewing. And Swami said, this is television in Telugu, he used to say Telu Visham.
Mm.
You know, Telu Visham, it's like poison scorpion. It gets in and it slowly, you know, builds up the toxins and you know, this is what happens. And then especially what is very critical is Swami told something very, very important, which is really worth cherishing for all of us. It is especially while eating, don't watch TV, he said. Tineetappudu matram television asal chudakandi, he said. Because when you're watching television and you're watching something on the screen, the moment of the scene might have a lot of negative energy, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're watching it and you munch faster, you get into some kind of a mental connect with the screen and that's what you consume and mm-hmm. all those thoughts get into your body through your food mm-hmm. and all that. Swami is narrating all this. So especially while eating, mm-hmm. don't watch television. And this is a very crystal clear message Bhagavan gave.
Brother, one thing, while you're all talking about, you know, resolution, not seeing television, all this is fine once you have matured, once you have tasted, once you want to follow good, all that is fine. But now I am a 5-year-old kid, okay, and I need TV to eat food. Let me say, that's the thing which happens in all the homes. Now, right now, I go anywhere, that's what happens. So how do I divert? See, because parents are also not playing an important part there. They are just allowing. Okay, okay, fine. I just allow them to see movie. So what? I get into my work. They are not disturbing me. I switched on TV. They are not disturbing. Okay, let them watch movie. I am going to do my work. That's what is the attitude which is slowly coming. But how do you, in a good way, like you allow them to watch something maybe. You have to do something if you want to really divert their attention. Because Swami also said once, till the age of 6, it's like record button is pressed in a child's mind. Whatever they see, they perceive, that's what stays and that's what they become. You might not know that that's happened. You will forget what happened at the age of 3, 4. But that's what they become. But how do, as parents, what role parents have to play in diverting the attention of children and in making them do good, in making them see good? How do we act?
I think, as Brother Vaishnava said, that we have to remember that when we are engaged in bad, or even good actually, but let's focus on this bad aspect first. When you're engaged in bad, not only are we being bad ourselves or dwelling on the negative, but we're also creating a community of delinquency around us. You know, the people around us are also becoming delinquent with this.
Right.
So victims. Victims. And the same is there for good also. That's why the power of satsang is there. And Swami has so many times inspired us to be parents, you know, kind of Prahlada style, where we go in and then we talk to the child, inspire him to think noble thoughts. And I think that that's what the parents are supposed to do. They're supposed to go in and motivate the child, not with a passive television which downpours whatever it wants, but through an active divine energy flow. You know, I mean, with food, they should sing a beautiful bhajan, inspire them, tell them stories of Ramayana or some Quran or Bible stories, something that's very inspiring, moral stories, telling them. Even in science, you know, that's what our whole educational system is in Swami's fold, right? Where Swami is telling us science, but at the same time, he's teaching us extraordinary divine science, right? And so what is happening is that we have to give the chocolate to entice the child, figuratively, not literally. You know, so you're telling a story. Through the story, you're actually injecting a beautiful divine message. And so parents need to understand the importance of this. There's a beautiful story, actually. There was a radio play that was done. I'd like to share that for a moment. There's a parent who's shown in scene one talking to his child. He's just born, father is very happy, and then he's actually holding and cuddling the baby, and he says, "Oh, my son, you're just born, such a beautiful child you are." And he says, "I want you to grow up to be an extraordinary human being, go to America, get fame, get wealth, be an extraordinary scientist, and earn some, you know, high rewards and recognition." And then first birthday child comes in and he's babbling and saying some baby sounds, and the father comes in and he says, "Oh, my son, you're looking charming. You will be an extraordinary hero in your life. I want you to go abroad, become famous, and you know, accomplish many things. Do your master's and PhD in some famous university. Make me proud." Then second birthday, third birthday, 15th birthday, 16th birthday, then the son again comes to the father and says, "Father, it's my birthday, bless me." And he says, "Son, I want you to become a very accomplished personality in some scientist in American university. Here I'm putting in FD, I'm putting, you know, 10,000 rupees, and I want you to grow up and become a famous person." 21st birthday comes in, the son again is blessed by father like this. And the 21st birthday, he says, "Son, now it's your time. You should go abroad and get your education. The FD has matured. Now you have 30,000 or 40,000, enough for a ticket. I'm going to sponsor you. I'm going to do all this. Here, take the money and go." And just as the son is about to leave, there's a phone ring. And the father picks up the phone and he says, "Oh, you know, your wife is coming from Vijayawada. Suddenly she met with an accident. And then they're saying that she needs surgery. By the way, the hospital called and said, come with 30,000 rupees in your hand because the surgery is going to cost you money." And then the father is immediately surprised, shocked, devastated by this tragic news. Then he turns to the son and says, "Son, let's go. And, you know, we need to take care of mother." Then he says, "Oh, by the way, the 30,000 that FT matured, na, for the ticket that I just gave you, I need that money back because I need for your mother's operation. So we'll figure out the ticket later, but first give me the 30,000 back. So now I'll do this. So let's go to the travel agent later." So at this moment, what is very interesting is the son pauses. the son is pausing and he's saying, "Oh, you want the money back, Dad?" He says. He says, yeah, your mother is in the operating theater. She needs money. She needs money for the surgery. He says, yeah, I understand. But do you need this 30,000? Can she have some other, medical intervention that is not so costly? He says, "Hey, son, what kind of son are you? Don't you realize your mother, it's your mother, man, who is in the hospital. She needs care and attention." He says, true. But do you really need this 30,000? Because it was allocated for my ticket, no? I need to go to America and get foreign education and other things. Then suddenly the father is stuck in this devastated world of reality where he's facing a son who is thinking twice about caring for his mother. Now, of course, the story may continue or end, but the point that is very critical for us to understand here is that when a father raises his son to have value X, how can he expect the son to produce value Y at the end? Today, parents may be raising children who should, go abroad and have fancy values outside. How will they now grow up to be mature, responsible adults and take care of their own elders? So when they age, I just came back from somebody's tragic personal loss. And what I found is, the kids are abroad, they have earned a lot of money. They would like to sponsor Taj meals for the father who is in India. They would like to do that to show their love, then come here and take care of him. The elder parents today are dependent on their milkmaid and on their housekeeping staff, then their children. Because they have taught the children to value something else. But yet, in their eve of life, when they're older, they want their sons to display new values. How will that come? It won't. That's why Swami seeded us with noble thoughts. He said, when you're raising children, raise them to be sensitive to elders, to understand and appreciate how to care for their own well-being. So, when you raise kids well, then they will be take care of you in your old age also. It is for your own good that Swami has said. So, it's a very important thing that they've done. And this attitude, I think, is very important for our devotees to also carry. It's not just parents, Parents should have this attitude towards upbringing of their children. That is very true, and Swami has said that. But devotees also should carry this attitude that children should be taught noble values and should be shown and invited to practices, and a nice environment for that should be created. So what is happening, I think, devotees should embrace all youngsters who are coming to samitis, bhajan mandalis and other places. Embrace them as their own children. Groom them into noble, ideal youngsters. We should not think of them as a youngster who's capable of doing work. So let's give him some grunt work so that he can do work. He's a young boy. He can do a lot of things. Let him do this thing. Hey, you arrange mics here. Here, you take care of this, doing this. No, don't treat them like laborers. They are, after all, your children. So every devotee must think of all the youth members as his or her own children.
Right.
And they should care for them in that
way. One important thing, Sahit, some of these points that you touched upon are very critical. And very critical to Sai folks and also to the rest of the people outside. I heard a few elders giving guidance on this aspect. Obviously, they were very close to Swami, so Swami would have also given his inputs on that. But the thing is, here the important aspect to understand is what is the inheritance that we want to pass on to our children. And I remember Anil Kumar sir talking about this, Professor Anil Kumar, and he was saying that each of these parents, they want to give a lot of real estate, a lot of plots, a lot of jewelry, some abroad tickets. This is the inheritance the parents are typically wanting to pass on to the next generation. And this is not the right inheritance, he was saying. One day I heard him say this in a public forum. And then he said the real inheritance is the Sai way of living, the values, the God-centricity of life filled with service to humanity. And, this is the inheritance that we should try and pass on to our young people, to our children. Mm. Have we passed on this inheritance? Have we passed on the great value that Swami has passed on to each one of us? So is it available for the next generation? Is the next generation feeling great being part of this Sai system? Are they delighted coming to a Sai center? So many elders, such good people, great values, great love I'm experiencing in Sai Center. I'll be able to create this environment in the Sai Center in the first place. You know, and this is very critical, and it's very easy to talk, but then to really practice them in every Sai Center and to make it really dear to everybody, it's not an easy thing. One has to be vigilant that, you know, Swami is involved in this, and we can't do disservice to the Sai mission by not doing the right things at the ground level.
And brother, as you said in the beginning, the world is too tempting. And the siren call of the world is too strong in our ears that you can sway away to a movie theater, that you can actually go to some place to entertain yourself, go on a joyride or eat in a restaurant or, you know, enjoy yourself. At a time like that, it's important that our samitis, our centers embrace the youngsters who are making a choice to come to God, you know, and give that conducive environment, the satsang. The satsang here is not talking down, giving them chore work, grunt work to do some laborious things, but embracing these youngsters as their own kith and kin, as their own children. And the children themselves should understand, the youngsters themselves should understand that they're talking to somebody very respectable, very noble, and that kind of amicable, divine relationship should exist between the elder person in the samiti and the youngster in the samiti. And that is one very important element. So, and Swami talks about, you know, even in convincing the elder, instead of saying, uncle, this is what we'd like to do, he uses the term father. The way we should speak to our elder is that we should say, father, we would like to do this. He says, use those terms. When you use those words, father, the person is immediately melting, you know.
He's already conducive to what you want to say.
Exactly.
He want to listen at least.
Exactly.
And then one more thing, while you're talking, you know, how to create that amicable and that conducive environment between elders and in the Sai Center. You know, when any non-believer also, we have heard many stories, when they come first to Swami, the way Swami interacts, he just smiles with all he has. You know, you could see the love in that smile. So when we have, like Swami says, you may not be intending that love inside, but first pretend.
Yes.
Then you will tend. Then you will end being that. So first you have to be, at least start by pretending, yes, I want to be good.
Yes.
But I am not, maybe, but I want to be good. I want to pretend. And one more thing you said, brother, as you all said, at a young level, like at 6 years, 7 years, if you are able to model children, they'll grow up to be like, you sown them with some seed, they'll give that fruit. But you sow them with different seed at that age, they will give it. But what Swami has done is, okay, he has taken at a very different stage where it has become already flower and about to become a fruit. Then he tried to at least change there so that it's not fully bad.
Yes.
Okay, I have some flower which I may need to, now I need to change this. Otherwise, it's going to be poisonous to the world. So at that point, that is the age of youth.
Another important thing, while Sai was narrating the importance of the young people being directed well and protected in a right environment, here the thing is, there are scores of young people in this world. The scores of people outside the Sai centers. Okay, and then how many are able to get into a groove like this? How many? So out of millions and millions of people outside, few hundreds are able to surface in a Sai system. Few hundreds or maybe few thousands. And then in that, how many are active? How many are inactive? How many are actually showing up every day in a Sai center? Few, very few, tens, twenties. I wish to convey that the scarcity of the resource, it's such a scarce thing. It is too expensive to lose our young people in the center. It's too expensive because millions are out there outside. They don't want to come here. They're enamored by the external attractions. Very, very few thousands are coming into the Sai system. In that, few hundreds are coming to a Sai center, which means that this guy really has conviction. In fact, I remember Ramanrao sir saying this many times, that he used to say that, you know, don't push these youngsters to come at 4 a.m. in the morning for Nagar Sankirtan, that is, and so many things we tell them. Don't tell them too many do's and don'ts. If we tell them too many things like this, what happens is they get overwhelmed by this new environment, and then they might think that I may not be able to live up to the expectations of and the tight schedules of these Sai centers. And then Ramanrao uncle used to say this many times. He used to say that today's youngster, see, 30 years ago, 25 years ago, the temptations outside were not as many.
Yes.
Okay. Mm. Today, every little thing is sold. Everything is marketed. Everything is branded and packaged in a way that it entices every person, right? So, and then Ramanrao sir used to say this, and then he used to say that don't push them too hard and tell them a list of do's and don'ts on day one. And or day 100 also, you know, we just give them an environment where they automatically tend to learn from elders. You know, they look at this uncle, how sweetly he talks, he has given away his life in service, and that's how you draw inspiration from such good people in the Sai system, and that's how you should pick up one each value and put aside all the bads one has accumulated.
You need to leave the person to learn from the system,
yeah,
rather than you putting the system on it. Yeah, like, you know, we need to create that appreciation and that awareness, because once if you take a product, dairy milk, let's say, the fellow puts, the dairy milk owner, whoever, he puts a lot of ads to create that awareness that this you eat, it is sweet. It has nuts in it. It has fruits in it. And you go nuts over it. It's like, you know, it's like he creates that awareness. In the same way, spiritual awareness is also necessary. But once I remember, you know, somebody asked Swami, Swami, you built so many hospitals, so many water projects, so much you're doing, but no marketing, no publicity. Then Swami said, the patients who go out of my hospital, they are the walking advertisements of my love. I need not advertise, I need not create awareness. They are there to tell you. So each one of us need to be that one walking inspiration to our youngsters and to the next generation.
Sai ambassadors.
Sai ambassadors. Yes.
One last point I want to make that's, I think, very critical is that in this process, as youngsters and the Sai fold, one of the things that I'd like to stress is that spirituality is not a killjoy. You don't have to end up being some sort of great sadhu or a saint or a person with lot of strict discipline and never smiles and castor oil face, as Swami says, you know. Spirituality is not all that, you know. It's much more than that. And then you can have fun in the process, you know. So you don't have to watch movies or television or get indulged in things that are, let's say, drawing you in the wrong direction. But you can create a beautiful movie on a good thing. You can actually, you don't have to engage in a game of competition, but you can actually be with two people and engage in an activity of cooperation. So it is not, youngster does not mean while away your time in doing some sort of archaic, arcane old practice that you can't make sense out of and with lot of symbolism and all kinds of confusion that you can't explain to your fellow brothers who think that you are some gone crazy fellow. You can still live a normal life. But choose to do the right things and choose to do it in a good way.
Right.
You can play a game, but cooperation. You can do good work. And I think that's the thing. Don't become a killjoy. Read good books, but read.
Exactly. Like whatever you said, no? You have all the Arishad Vargas, like anger, lust, greed, everything. But turn it toward good thing. Turn it towards God. What Swami said was, turn all these things towards good and then you get 100 times better results in all these things. And like what Swami said, start early, drive slowly, and definitely you'll reach safely. It's just that we have to try to start early, and if we have not started early, at least our generations further down, we should inspire them to start early. And you have shared a lot, and I wouldn't say this is the end of it. I would say just this is the beginning of it. And I would really request you all, whenever you are here, please come out to our studios and share these thoughts, because what we think is that everybody knows everything. We need not say. But it is not that, because at least we are blessed. There is no overstatement when I say we are blessed to have been connected with God. We walked with God, we talked with God, He touched us, and definitely we are transformed. If we are not transformed in it, that's a mistake in us. But I feel that He has done His bit. Swami has done His bit in transforming us, and to share that love, whatever He touched us, every moment had an significant and very profound meaning in whatever he did. Whether walking up to Srinivas brother in the 12th row and talking about a movie when he is God, he had no business. He had thousands of devotees sitting there for his darshan. While sitting, all the concentration he turned onto this boy and made it a point to go and tell him. Why? Because he is God. He need not have done that. He could have just told any elder there, that fellow is seeing Mood, throw him out. That's what he needs to do. If he wants to, he can correct him that way also. But he took the pain to go. So all of us need to take a little bit of pain if we want to give that joy. It's sweet pain, but we need to go out of our way. And really thank you all to have taken this little bit of pain to come. See, you left the Monday program, now it's going on. You wanted to be there maybe, but still you took that, okay, if we share this, it might help somebody. And really it helped us, and I'm very happy that you're all here, and I, on behalf of Radio Sai, we want you more and more in Hyderabad also. Record in the studio which is there, please record as many good programs like this on various things which youth wants to know. Believe me, parents, youth, everybody wants to know good. And please share with them all that knowledge which Swami has passed on, all that love which Swami has passed on. And thank you once again. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, brother. Thank
Sai
you.
Ram.
Thank you,
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, this is the segment Service Love in Action. And what you listen to right now is was a panel discussion by the Hyderabad youth on the importance of molding the character of today's youth for a better tomorrow. Well, dear listeners, participating in this panel discussion were Mr. Y. Srinivas, Mr. Sai Gollapudu, and my colleague Sai Krishna. In fact, dear listeners, you can join Sai Krishna at 3:30 this afternoon, and he will bring for you the Telugu broadcast. Well, this panel discussion was recorded in the studios just a couple of days back when the Sai youth from Hyderabad had come to Prashant Nilayam on the occasion of the Sankranti festival. I'm sure, dear listeners, that you would have benefited much from the panel discussion, the take-home lessons of this panel discussion. Do send us your feedback and comments on this. You can reach us through email. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. Well, the time in our studio is 12:30, and I am Team Radio Sai Raghu. Placing this segment at the lotus feet of our Bhagwan, Sri Satya Sai Baba, I take your leave by playing for you a bhajan on Lord Hanuman. Stay tuned and happy listening. Jai Sai Ram.
Siyavara Ramachandra ki jai, Pati Puri Sai Nath ki jai. Pavan Sut Hanuman ki jai. सीतापति रामचंद्र की जय, सीतापति रामचंद्र की जय, भवन सुत हनुमान की जय, पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय, पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय, पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय, प्रतिपुरी साईनाथ की जय, प्रतिपुरी साईनाथ की जय, हनुमान की जय, सीतापति रामचंद्र की जय, सीतापति रामचंद्र की जय, हनुमान की जय, पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय, पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय, पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय, पतिपुरी साईनाथ की जय, पतिपुरी साईनाथ की जय, पवन सुत हनुमान की जय। दशरथ नंदन श्री रामचंद्र धर्म संरक्षक राम, दशरथ नंदन श्री रामचंद्र
ధర్మ సంరక్షకర దేవకీ నందన మురళీధర ఆనందదాయక శ్యామ దేవకీ నందన మురళీధర ఆనందదాయక శ్యామ